adjacent industry, we must look at it. I mean, often people say, oh, no, is Google going to take over? Is Amazon going to take over? I don't think so. Insurers could become much more, develop much more interesting propositions for the customer they are trying to win.
Welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted, the show dedicated to innovation in the insurance industry. Each episode, you'll get a dose of thought leadership from the industry's top business minds, influencers, innovators, and executive leaders. If you want to transform your corner of the industry and exchange innovative ideas, you need to subscribe to this podcast. Now here's your host, Abel Travis.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast dedicated to the topic of insurance innovation. Now, you know, I'm going to jump right in today. You know, I'm really excited to be speaking with Sabine van der Linden, the Chief Executive Officer of Startup Bootcamp InsurTech. Now, with Startup Bootcamp InsurTech, you know, you may or may not already be aware, but they've launched their first insurance accelerator in Hartford, Connecticut, arguably the center of insurance for the U.S. You know, but before I jump in, I do want to recognize our sponsor of this podcast, and that's Vortex Legal. Innovation in the insurance field is exciting, and Vortex Legal is a unique and proven solution to help improve a company's loss ratio by substantially reducing legal expenses. You know, their nationwide network of local attorneys attend the voluminous and routine and predictable hearings for a flat rate, not an hourly rate. So Vortex Legal solution works with both staff counsel offices as well as outside law firms. They've saved many carriers millions of dollars. So if you want to learn more, just contact Jonathan Broder at 954-473-2648 or visit vortexlegal.com. You know, so once again, I want to welcome Sabine van der Linden to the podcast, the Chief Executive Officer of Startup Bootcamp InsurTech. Now, Startup Bootcamp InsurTech is the leading early stage accelerator for insurance technology startups. You know, Sabine is also the global head for InsurTech at Rainmaking Innovation. Sabine, I'm very honored to have you here on the Insurance Innovators Unscripted podcast. Welcome.
Thank you very much, Havel. Thank you for having me on online with you and your audience.
Oh, no, you know, Sabine, that's my pleasure. You know, so Sabine, you know, as I look at your background, you know, it's amazing. You know, just talk to me about your expertise and how you came to be such a force in the insurance industry.
Okay, well, I started my career at Lloyd's of London, actually, over 20 years ago. So, I mean, insurance is, I guess, part of the DNA. So I'm French, and I got selected to come and do my studies in London. And at the end of it, actually, Lloyd's was actually amazing in the sense that they actually went to university and talked about how great Lloyd's was at the time. And after visiting Lloyd's of London, I decided that actually I was interested in insurance. And I worked first for one of their brokers, and then afterwards for the corporation that of Lloyd's when regulation was at Lloyd's. I spent a few years working for the corporation, and then, like many people do, I went to do my MBAs. After that, I decided I wanted to become a strategy consultant in insurance and worked for companies such as IBM within the PwC acquisition, and then I left IBM and worked for companies such as FICO and Pegasystems and a well-known UK company called SSP, always taking roles as head of innovation and strategy and growth, looking at, you know, where the market would be going and leveraging technology as a means to enable insurance companies to evolve with their times. 3 years ago, a group of investors approached me and asked me whether I could take care of one of their companies, which was a fintech. I did. And after a year, I realized that what was happening in fintech would also occur in insurance tech. And at the end of 2014, I focused my attention to the startups wanting to work in insurance and with insurers. And very quickly after that, worked with Startup Bootcamp and set up Startup Bootcamp InsurTech. And has been running this since.
Okay, you know, so Sabine, just talk to me a little bit about what Startup Bootcamp is and what you all stand for.
So at Startup Bootcamp, we mostly have for objective to enable startups to achieve in 3 months what would take them 12 to 18 months to do on their own. So it's a big statement. That also means that our focus area will be seed level to Series A level startups, startups which are trying to grow and design sustainable business models. But the way we do that is by working with a number of corporate companies. And so our model is a corporate innovation-led acceleration program where we enable startups and corporate to come together. First, the main reason is by having both parties work together first, we can drive traction. And from traction, we can actually help the startup raise funding. So our focus, therefore, is also mostly on B2B insurance tech startup wanting to work with insurance companies and helping them with their innovation agenda.
So out of what you've been doing with startup boot camps, have you seen many successes with bringing the incumbent and the startups together? And what did that success look like?
I mean, when you look at why large businesses, incumbents, you know, are starting working with Accelerator, whether it is ours or any others, is first because they're actually trying to understand what this startup ecosystem and what it does mean. And as a result, you know, any organization which starts interacting in this type of framework, you can actually see they already have a mindset where they want to change their business. Deliver potentially digital transformation capabilities, enabling that business to interact better with a new set of customers, a new set of technologies, so that they're actually more suitable for doing business in tomorrow. So when you look at the profile of those insurance companies, I think there are quite many of them interesting in insurance tech startups. But what we've seen is that for them is developing a framework, is really understanding their innovation themes, and by doing that, becoming much more nimble and flexible in the way they actually welcome younger businesses within their environment. And instead of doing things themselves, they actually learn that actually they don't have to do everything themselves, like many insurance companies have done in the past. That actually there is a wonderful capabilities out there which can be implemented within the corporate environment to enable them to differentiate and drive competitive advantage.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, when I look at incumbents, you know, partnering with, let's say, startups or new technology providers, what I realize is that they're able to be much more nimble, just in terms of executing on the idea that the startup or that the partner may bring to the table, instead of having to do all of that work on their own. And trying to be nimble within a huge corporate framework. So, you know, bringing the two together, I think really helps to drive that value and potential change within that incumbent organization. Now, you know, Sabine, you focus on InsurTech, but, you know, there is a change that's brewing where startups and incumbents are going to collide. And you see that with what you're doing. You know, so how do you bring the two together to drive the necessary enhancement of the insurance value chain?
So, I mean, one big part of our work is looking at what is happening everywhere in the world. So, you know, year one, when we started with the first program, we actually identified probably over 1,000 startups which were relevant for the corporate insurers we're working with. Then last year, we probably talked to over 2,000 startups, and this year we are, you know, going over around 4,000 startups. So, what we do is first look at what is happening around the globe from a startup viewpoint. What are the themes the startup want to focus on? Sometimes they're focusing on things which actually corporate are not interested in. But our ability to scan and really identifying patterns which are relevant for the industry is very important for us. So that first, we start with that scanning process where we identify great opportunities which we can actually bring to bear Second, we actually welcome a number of startups into our acceleration program. So we only select 10 startups to come into acceleration. And the reason is because we're actually pushing a lot of resources to each one of those companies, because our main objective is to help them design sustainable business models. And through that process, we have our corporate partners spending time on a monthly basis, maybe weekly basis, with those startups to help them work on use cases which are relevant to them. By working on these use cases, we then progress to pilots and POC stages. And our goal is not just to do that for 3 months, right? You know, when a startup has gone through one of our programs, they become alumni. And then, you know, our alumni team work with them to help them identify new project, potential partners they could work with, maybe in insurance, but also in adjacent industries. We are running over 21 programs in 16 cities at the moment, which means that, you know, when I look at my transportation colleagues running the transportation program, if there are startups which are, you know, mobility startups which are relevant for insurance companies I'm working with, we make as well those introductions. So our alumni process as well is very, very important to us, to allow those startups to grow. So once they have a sustainable business model and they can actually start making money, we need to actually help them grow as much as we can within our network and with leveraging our capabilities.
So Sabine, you know, one of the things you mentioned there, and that's your first step, is looking at what's occurring and what's happening all around the world, you know, to see if there's an opportunity to bring the different ideas together and potentially leverage it within the insurance value chain or out of another value chain. You know, so what are some of the trends that you're seeing play out worldwide in this in the insurance market?
Well, we see technology trends. We see what I call more innovation or business themes. And then we see patterns occurring across industries. So when you start looking at technology, I'm sure you are not going to be surprised, but, you know, emerging technology comes at the forefront. Everybody wants to understand how to leverage the Internet of Things, smart devices, intelligent machines, whether that is artificial intelligence or robotic, drones, genomics. From a technology viewpoint, what we've seen is when we did our first program, maybe 40% of the startups leverage an emerging technology. After our last PwC Startup Bootcamp report, over 53% of the startups we talked to last year and beginning of this year leverage an emerging technology. Going through the portfolio we have now sourced for our new program, it's fascinating to see that I think it would be probably 80%. And, you know, one of the other would be, you know, Internet of Things, sensors, working around smartphone and apps and going down the value chain and saying that it's not just about the front office only, it's about the back office too, and using software as a service capabilities in the cloud. And then, you know, for sure, artificial intelligence is everywhere. And, you know, there are so many different algorithms around artificial intelligence. I will just keep it to artificial intelligence, because then you need to look at the startup using deep learning. You have to look at those using other algorithms to build predictions at the underwriting stage. And then you have robotics, those bots, which can be used to augment processes, whether those are service processes or claims processes. So what we see is, from a technology viewpoint, startup leveraging a multitude of capabilities. From a business viewpoint, insurance companies wanting to understand how they can leverage a series of capabilities to change their business. So how do I create a new offering which is going to be relevant for the connected world, whether that's smart home, smart building, smart car, smart fleet, and, you know, how am I going to be part of the sharing economy as examples. And then what we've noticed is that, and in my cohort, you will always find startups coming from adjacent industries. You know, prop tech, legal tech, med tech are great areas to actually find startups which are relevant for insurers. One of my first startups in year one was BuzzMove, now a rebranded product around asset digitization called BuzzVault. when you look at that startups, you would say, when you looked at it first, it's a prop tech startup. What is it doing into an insurtech program? Well, today, it's an insurtech, very well renowned, at least in Europe, insurtech startups, which has an asset digitization platform enabling individuals like you and I to put all our stuff onto that platform and find the right insurance for those items. Adjacent industry, we must look at it. I mean, often people say, oh, no, is Google going to take over? Is Amazon going to take over? I don't think so. But what I can see is that by leveraging various capabilities, whether that is mobility, and as already mentioned, prop tech, legal tech, or med tech, actually insurers could become much more, develop much more interesting propositions for the customer they are trying to win.
Yeah, you know, Sabine, you mentioned, whether or not a company like Google is going to take over, or maybe Amazon if they decide to come into this space. And you know, as you look back into when they tried to dabble in this space, Google specifically, I think it was Google Compare, a couple of years later, they wound up folding and closing shop in the insurance space as they recognized that it was a challenge from a regulatory perspective to really come in and dive in headfirst in this space. Now, you know, you also then mentioned about, you know, technology. And you know, earlier, you know, I was talking about the challenge in a lot of incumbent carriers being nimble, especially when their technology is really calcified into their being. You know, it's a real challenge for them to overhaul the back office, you know, as you were saying, not just focus on the front office, but the back office technology. So with that being tough, there are a lot of startups that, to your point, you know, can come in and help to change that because they do have the capability to be more nimble. So, you know, from your perspective in the insurance industry, where do you think the most innovation will originate? Do you think that's going to be within the incumbent carriers, within the startups, or do you think it'll be someplace in between?
So it's an interesting question because, when you look at companies, for instance, in the UK, we have Direct Line. And I love using that example because I think when you look at a business like Direct Line, it's what makes us different in the UK from the US market. Direct Line, when they came to market, they actually move insurance from being an agent-driven product to being a direct-to-consumer product. And actually, and as a result, you know, people being able to buy insurance on the phone. Now, most of us, when we buy our insurance for a car or home, we'll go online and use digital media. Very rarely will we want to talk to an agent. And as a result, I think we in Europe have a lot of disruption happening because, you know, insurance has to. People are hopping from one insurer to the next just to find the best deals. And so because of that, when you look at retail insurance, it's very creative, it's very dynamic. And, you know, the utilization of emerging technology within retail insurance is really, really big here, at least in Europe. That would take you maybe into the Lemonade and the Trove type proposition, which are in the US and, you know, going potentially global. But for us in Europe, we have to have those propositions because that's the way a consumer buy already insurance. And to differentiate, now an insurance company may have to deliver their own digital proposition. They need to use a cool name to actually get more attractive to millennials and the younger generation needing to buy insurance. You need to understand that customer in the sense that they do not own a home anymore, they just own stuff. So they will want to insure their mobile phone, their laptop, their shoes, you know, beautiful dresses, rather than, you know, insuring the whole set of content they have in that home. Freelancer need to insure their equipments, and so that is valuable to them. So where we allocate value is very, very different. As a result, the proposition coming to bear are more aligned to that new customer set and therefore become a bit more direct and therefore is changing the way those products are being changed. I do think that maybe in the future, you know, I will buy my insurance with my TV. So what does it mean for the insurer? Are the insurers going to be white labelers and just deal with the claims, or are we still going to have big insurance brands? You see parametric insurance coming to market as well, which again, is changing the way the insurance products is being designed. A great startup focusing on that is called Cover with a Q. So where does, you know, these emerging capabilities and new ideas going to come from? I think for sure startups are pushing those ideas because for some reason, you know, an entrepreneur and have the ability to create new offerings, and the way they are geared and the way they think they can actually can create things fast. I think for it to scale, there needs to be that collaboration. That's my belief, and that might not be the belief of everybody, right? Because I think that 80% of the startup coming to market are actually B2B startups, and therefore their goal is to work with corporates, incumbents. You will have 20% of those companies want to be disruptors and will go and find investment money from large investors and then create their own carrier organization rather than try to collaborate with other organizations within the ecosystem. I think a good example of, for example, something that people need to be wary of, you know, when Zenefit came to market with their great proposition, they didn't want to work with brokers. And I think after some of these issues they actually faced with regulation, they realized maybe they should have probably worked with the broker community. So insurance, like banking, is a very regulated, are very regulated products. And therefore, for both parties to succeed, I think the collaboration aspect of things will need to play.
Yeah, I definitely agree that the collaboration elements really need to play out. And you mentioned quite a few things that I want to dig into, you know, the whole Zenefits thing, where they realize that, you know, after launching that, hey, you know, regulators actually care about what you're doing, you know, and it sort of forced them to really change their business model to start to work with brokers and start to do things within what the regulators are requiring. And now, you know, just to go back to the first example that you mentioned, and that's Direct Line out of the UK. So that's, you know, to your point, sort of a direct to market where consumers can come in and request their insurance. But, you know, I look at that as, let's say, the personal line space that really tends to be very, very commoditized. You know, so, you know, while personal lines is very commoditized, when you start to look at commercial lines and, you know, let's say property and general liability and other commercial lines, I definitely see that commercial lines is much more, or it's being, see it as being much more complex, but also, you know, very ripe for disruption. So a lot of the more disruptive models that I've seen are targeting the back office instead of really the front office when it comes to the more complex, non-commoditized businesses. Now, from what you're seeing, are you seeing, you know, let's say commercial lines incumbents being also being innovated, I guess, in terms of what along their value chain, but not on the back office, on the front office?
So I think what you find is from a front office viewpoint, you will find brands who actually invest a lot in new product and services. So when you look at, for example, an insurer like Munich Re, and I'm sure people have looked at Munich Re's portfolio of great investment and partnership, a lot of the focus is on new product to market. So when you look at Munich Re and their partnership with Munich Re Digital Partners, so digital partners angle, it's a lot of new product and services offering, so therefore top line growth objective, which are being either invested in or coming into collaborative partnership agreements. So you will have within that group, for example, Bought by Many, you would have Trove, but you also have startups which are providing industrial IoT or Internet of Things capabilities. Let's take Relayer, which was a startup actually which did our program in 2013 and received investment from Munich Re in 2016. Around over 20 million. And then you will see as well capabilities which enable such organization to focus on macro insurance, on-demand insurance, moment insurance, and then transferring that into maybe the fleet space. You will see that happening as well with organizations such as AXA, which have been investing in startups which are very much in the lead generation space. A lot of lead generation, I categorize as lead generation capabilities, but then also internet-first platforms, let's say around health, around motor, around investment, And then looking at it from much more capability viewpoints. So one of the investments, for instance, is around a breathalyzer, right? So when you start mixing the breathalyzer startup with the telemetry proposition around, on-demand IoT connected car type proposition, then you start delivering and developing a different type of offerings for your customer base. What that means is a lot of the offerings which are coming out there will be not only product focused, but very heavily service driven, leveraging therefore technology, so software. And as you highlighted, when we started our journey, a lot of startups coming to market realized that the big problem for insurance companies was customer engagement. But as they continue to learn what the clear problems of the insurance organization is, they are moving back to the back office and every API and capabilities which allow an insurance organization to put new product and services offering to market much easier and much faster.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned the customer engagement piece, and I find that to be really interesting just in terms of what carriers are doing in terms of engaging customers. Now, you know, policyholders tend to interact with the carriers less than 2 times per year. And most of the times, you know, it's either to pay their premium or to file a claim. Outside of that, you're not really hearing from the carriers. You know, so as an industry, you know, should the industry focus on better interactions with policyholders? Because arguably, you know, I think at least one of those interactions should not be stressful. And when it comes to paying claims or, you know, policyholders filing claims, it's most likely because there's a stressful situation that they're in. So from your perspective, you know, do you think that the industry should focus on, you know, really interacting in a much more positive way when it comes to customer engagement?
Absolutely. I think one big example here, at least for us in the UK, has been the shift for some segment of the population to telematic insurance, which, you know, as we see the world evolving, will go into connected vehicle insurance and move potentially around, you know, because of the autonomous vehicle theme, will probably change the way insurance or motor insurance looks like in the future. So what we have learned from telematic insurance in the UK, that product was mostly targeted to a segment of the population, which are the young drivers, 5 million young drivers in the UK. And what you find is most of the young drivers have very, very expensive insurance being charged to them. So over £3,000, so let's say around $4,000 to $5,000 for a policy for a young driver in the UK. By using telemetry, that products went down to £1,800, let's say $2,500, which is, you know, nearly a 50% cost saving, right? And so what happened with the design of those products is very service-led, in the sense where a young driver will have the ability to check how well they are driving, because he can learn, see how they swerved, he or she swerved, you know, whether they stopped adequately at the red light and stuff like that, because they get this dashboard with those feedback. And then by using gamification type approaches, also engaging groups, community of drivers to actually try to drive better. And then the last angle of this proposition is the discounting and the reward mechanism, a little bit like Vitality, where the driver get points to go and buy clothes, at the favorite shops, or are able to go to the cinema with friends if that is what interests them. So when you look at that product, first, it's, you know, you have an app associated to it, and then you have a brand which is then regularly interacting with that driver. And so for us is, okay, how can you transfer the thinking into other industry because of the IoT and the intelligent machines and the devices which are surrounding us? You know, could an insurer do that in the home space? Can we do that in the travel space, where we actually start engaging consumer on a regular basis? Now, this is very retail focused. I know that would not work in commercial lines, but still, when you start looking at commercial industrial insurance, you know, risks manager who have to actually understand where their goods are and better understand their supply chain and face hurricanes and extreme weather events, which we are, you know, affected by today. I'm sure would probably welcome dashboards which provide them with alerts and regular understanding of what may become a reputational risks or affect their ability to make money in the future.
Yeah, you know, so Sabine, I just want to I want to flip back to something you said earlier, actually. And earlier you mentioned Lemonade. And what you mentioned about Lemonade was, you know, the model, the P2P model that Lemonade is using. You know, just now you mentioned that that's an opportunity for other organizations or other, let's say, startups or new carriers and newcomers into the industry to leverage a similar model along with other things, as you mentioned, like IoT and so on. Now, you know, but thinking about that Lemonade example, you know, they reported results. And while they didn't collect a lot, they wound up paying more out in claims than they actually collected in premium. You know, so as you think about that model in comparison to all of the other models that you mentioned, what that's telling me is that while these are really early days and while Lemonade is probably, you know, one of the most visible carriers that are using the P2P model, we still don't have an understanding as to whether or not P2P is a model that works and that works well. You know, so from your perspective, Sabine, do you think that, you know, out of all of the other models or things that carriers can be doing, do you think that the P2P model is one that could potentially work and show real value?
I mean, peer to peer is a, I mean, you know, insurance started peer to peer, right? Mutual, you know, insurance started like this. Now, what we call peer to peer is using digital technology to make it a little bit less friction, you know, take out the friction and actually use social media and the digital capabilities to actually acquire customers and retain them and manage them. Now, I mean, I think the challenge with peer to peer is what we've seen is the pool within peer to peer tend to be quite small. And I guess as we collect more data and we start understanding the behavior of those different pools, some organization will potentially make money. I mean, the French insurance, I have to say, and I've seen other models in Europe are actually profitable models around peer-to-peer. And I've been, you know, in the crest of French insurance. I know that company now probably for 7-8 years. So they have been running for a while. I personally believe that the challenge with Lemonade is because there's so little friction in the ability to claim, and I don't think it's a problem with the peer-to-peer. I think it's about the fact it's, you know, we can claim in 3 seconds. We potentially may have, you know, fraudulent claims which we are not able to identify early stage. But as you said, still very early times. I mean, the model has been running for a year, something like that. And so as, you know, the team's using behavioral economics to refine their ability to really better understand their customer base, the result might be very different in a year from now.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what I was thinking originally when I realized the results of Lemonade. You know, I didn't really think that it really came down to the P2P model itself. But I when I looked at it, I thought, okay, well, maybe the pool is small or there could potentially be some fraudulent claims being sent into the pool, basically. You know, so I think that that there's definitely an opportunity for peer-to-peer to work and work well, and there are some examples out there, as you mentioned, that's enabling that. But one of the things that you mentioned was really the collection of the data and all of the data that whether it's the new startups or the incumbent carriers have at their disposal. Now, you know, with the collection of the data, it could potentially provide a significant competitive advantage to carriers that are able to take that information and use that information very well in order to help to drive either new product opportunities or new opportunities to further enhance or enable the value chain. You know, so from your perspective, do you think that with data being such a valuable resource that there really is an opportunity for carriers to better mine that data or work with partners to help them mine that data to drive much more value back out to our policyholders?
Absolutely. I mean, the simple answer is yes. I think most insurance companies have amazing amount of data, historical data, I know, but have quantities of data. And at the moment, I don't think they're actually mining that data in an effective way to really understand what makes a difference, rather than using just two or three criteria to make choices. However, I think that when you start looking at the potential of usage of external data capabilities, you end up potentially designing completely different sets of offerings and understanding your customers in a very, very unique way. The reason why I'm saying that is, for example, there is a startup I really, really like, I've been working with, called Digital Fine Print. They are using social data, and they are doing it in a very, I would say, use the word stylish way, because they do not use the data without letting the consumer know that they are going to use the data to help them better assess life insurance and what is the best option for them to make sure they are properly covered. And so when you look at it from the incumbent viewpoint, you know, there is so many other sources of data they could use to actually better understand the customer, but also write the right product offerings and lead into precision, you know, precision writing, precision claim. And now it's about understanding the levers, which actually can make the policies of tomorrow much more relevant.
Yeah, you know, I definitely think that makes a lot of sense, Sabine. So thinking about that, thinking about, you know, just really being able to leverage the data in all of the other different models, you know, that we talked about here today in terms of innovation. What do you see for the future of the insurance industry if you had to look a few years down the line?
So if I have to look at what is going to happen a few years down the line, I mean, for me, when I look at my crystal ball, my hope would be that, you know, when we look back at today and look into the future, that actually the collaboration between corporates and startups have helped, those corporates design much more interesting business models and much more interesting proposition for their customer base, which are leveraging, digital capabilities that they are never thought about using, you know, years back. So for me, that collaboration is really, really important. And I sincerely hope that it works. And often the reason why it's not working, it's because there's fear from one party to the other. And so another part of the equation is, you know, how can those large businesses change their internal processes to allow organizations like startups to interact better with them? Because it still takes a long time for that to occur. But then I do also feel that some of those incumbent may decide that the legacy which support their current business need to change, and so they may end up designing new businesses, and then those startups which were small become bigger, and you know, the lemonade and the trove actually can then demonstrate that whatever they were meant to be is happening and is successful, a bit like the Uber and Airbnb of this world. We need those in insurance. And I think at the moment, the largest one, the one we tend to talk about the most is Shonghang, which is located in China, receive investment or support from Tencent, Alibaba, and Ping An. And, you know, today that company has over 400 million users, written over 4 billion policies or transactions, have, you know, IPO'd at 1.5 billion, it's valued at 10 billion. We need more of those. But I guess when you look at that specific organization, it's very China focused and they were able to leverage the capabilities within that market. Can we have the similar things happening in other markets, whether that's Europe or the USA?
Yeah, you know, Shonghang, actually, it amazes me the way that they were able to grow, in the way that they were able to leverage, you know, their ability to understand what the needs are and turn that into a really successful business model. What I'll do is I'm going to put some of that information on Shonghang and some of the things that we just talked about in the show notes so folks can really hone in and understand, you know, what they're doing and potentially, you know, leverage some of what they're doing in their design. And to your point, in the potentially in the Europeans and in the American markets, you know. Hey, so Sabine, you know, a question that I like to ask in order to make this tangible for our listeners is, you know, if there's something that our listeners can do to really innovate and think differently at their desk, you know, within the insurance carrier, within the carrier that they work in, you know, from your perspective, what is that thing that that the listener can do to just think differently about how they approach the business?
First, I think it's just to be curious and just read about InsurTech and get educated around the type of things which are coming to market. So that is, I think, the diverging view. Then when you start converging things is looking at what is not working within the organization, where, you know, what the customers of that organization want, and how some of those external capabilities could help the business be more effective in a very short period of time. And then I think the third leg is how you make it happen. So maybe education around innovation, you know, how to build your own innovation thesis, how to, you know, deliver your own innovation framework becomes really, really important, because you can't have this happen in an ad hoc manner. So QZT, you know, looking introspectively and then designing a framework to allow that flexibility and nimbleness within your organization, I think that would be what I recommend the audience to consider. And then, you know, go and visit accelerators and go and visit startups participating to accelerators or incubators and see what make those organizations a bit different. I'm very fortunate to work with very, very smart people, and every year with extremely smart businesses. It's humbling, you know, people deciding, you know, to leave their jobs often, you know, six-figure salaries to actually create their own businesses, and needing the support, whether that is from industry experts to investors and corporates, to help them make those businesses sustainable. And so to anyone in an insurance company wondering what they can do to have fun, well, look at innovation and the startup ecosystem, because it's really dynamic, and there is a lot happening which can blow your mind.
Absolutely, Sabine. Hey, you know, so before we go, I do also want to ask you the question about, you know, Startup Bootcamp Hartford and other locations where you all have Startup Bootcamp locations. So I know you all are just launching the Hartford Startup Bootcamp. You know, do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Yes. I feel really, really privileged to have been selected to support this initiative. So, yes, on the 25th of September, we launch the Hartford InsurTech Hub, which is not only as for objective to deliver an accelerator, but also to build an ecosystem and a community of entrepreneurship and talent in Hartford. Hartford was once upon a time the capital of insurance of the world. And so our goal is to turn Hartford as the capital of InsurTech. And so bring talent from all around the world, InsurTech startups from all around the world, to not only work with the insurers located in Hartford, and there are many of them, but also enable them to interact with the talent from the university, which are alongside, you know, all across Connecticut, to actually build insurance and technology capabilities which can serve insurers all across the U.S. So it's a very humbling initiative, and we're working really hard to get our first cohort in on January 8th. And so I hope that a lot of your audience will come and visit us in Hartford and meet with our startups and participate to our events and be part of this growing community of people wanting InsurTech to have a base. So, yes, that's what we are doing in Hartford.
You know, I find that to be really exciting. So, as you know, Sabine, I'm just right down the road from Hartford. And when I say down the road, not literally, but just in Massachusetts. And, you know, as you as I looked at all of the change that's been happening in Hartford from when it was once the insurance capital of the world until now, what I'm realizing is that, you know, a lot of carriers are starting to move out of Hartford. But then underlying you know, what's happening in Hartford. It's like it's not stopping, and the innovation isn't stopping. It's continuing. And a lot of these startups are actually helping the innovation to continue in Hartford and potentially enable that city to regain its seat at the table in terms of being the insurance capital of the world. So I think that what you all are doing in Hartford in order to really help to change what's happening there and change the economy of Hartford is really exciting. And I'm hopeful that, you know, a lot of our listeners are going to visit and, you know, really talk to and meet with some of these new startups that are going to be working with your accelerator. I know definitely I'm going to make an effort to go and talk to them and meet them as well, just to really learn more about, you know, what they're doing and then potentially help to provide value to them as well. So I do find that very exciting for the Hartford community and just for Connecticut in general. So Sabine, I do want to say thank you for your time here and for, you know, talking to me about you, yourself, your background and your thoughts in insurance innovation and just innovation in general. If our audience did want to get in contact with you or learn more about what you do, what can I do to help them learn more?
Well, they can actually go onto the Hartford InsurTech Hub website and use the email address, and this is going to go to our team, so Hartford team, or look at our website around Startup Bootcamp, InsurTech, so the InsurTech program, and then again here they can actually get in a hold of me. And the last bit is for sure my LinkedIn profile, Sabine van der Linden, or my Twitter feed, Sabine VDL. And I am a very good responder, so I do reply to the messages myself.
Perfect. Well, Sabine, once again, thank you. I do appreciate it, and I look forward to continuing to follow what you all are doing.
Oh, I look forward to seeing you in Hartford, Havel. So you're welcome to come and visit us there and follow all the work we are doing. There will be a lot of tweeting and a lot of socials event organized in the next few months. So come and everybody welcome to participate to those events too.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, everybody, and thank you for listening to this episode of the Insurance Innovators Unscripted Podcast. Now, you know, this is really exciting. You know, I joined as a mentor for the cohort for Startup Bootcamp InsurTech Hartford, and I would encourage everyone in the insurance industry that loves what this industry stands for and has some level of subject matter expertise to get involved with new and up-and-coming startups. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.